Hello, and welcome to Pearson's Rehabilitation and Therapy podcast series. In this series, we'll be discussing issues related to psychologists, occupational therapists, and speech-language pathologists who work with clients in rehabilitative or therapeutic settings. Today, our topic is the speech-language pathologist, or SLP's, role in interdisciplinary care. I'm Vanessa Berenson, and I'm here with Tina Eichstadt, an ASHA-certified licensed speech-language pathologist at Pearson. So, Tina, how does an SLP define interdisciplinary care?
Thanks, Vanessa, and I'm glad we have a chance to chat about this today. So our national organization, the American Speech Language Hearing Association, or ASHA, has done a great job in leading the way in the profession about what we call interprofessional practice or interprofessional education. So when we're talking about interdisciplinary care, we're really talking about the integration or the intersection of multiple disciplines coming together to provide the highest quality care possible in any setting that we work in, but in this case, in healthcare. So ASHA has done a great job of definitions, of working with other organizations around the world to look at collaborative practice and interdisciplinary care, and has set forth some great language that I would refer any SLP who hasn't seen it yet to really understand how we define that as a profession. So really, again, it's coming together of multiple disciplines across any setting where we work to provide the highest quality care in a collaborative way. And in addition to that, ASHA has also added language to our code of ethics for SLPs and audiologists, but in particular for today's conversation, SLPs, really looking at the ethical responsibility that we have to work collaboratively in an interdisciplinary care team. So those two pieces of work on ASHA's part really paved the way for us to define in our day-to-day work, wherever we sit in the profession and are working, to work then in those kind of contexts and ways. So the interprofessional practice and IPPIPE pages with ASHA, as well as the Code of Ethics. And really, in both of those areas, we talk about three key components in how we as SLPs think about interprofessional practice. And that is really the sharing of responsibility, first, decision-making, second, and communication, third. So as we look at interdisciplinary care, and in our terminology, IPP or IPE, we're really looking at how we share those three components, responsibility, decision-making, and communication, across every piece of our work with our colleagues in these other professions.
And what has been your clinical experience in interdisciplinary care?
So that's a fun story to tell because I had such a great opportunity to work with some really fantastic professionals in my clinical days before I came into publishing and into Pearson as of late. After school, I worked for a number of years at the Mayo Health System affiliate in Eau Claire, Wisconsin, Luther Middleford, and had an opportunity to work on the neuro and trauma and pediatrics unit that was in the hospital there. And we had, you know, a four-bed NICU, and we had a large floor that housed all the physicians and the nurses, of course, and our PTOT speech staff and social workers and trauma coordinators and all of those different disciplines that would come together as a team and deliver high-quality interprofessional practice. So that background for me really solidified all kinds of different things related to interdisciplinary care. So we saw on the unit, of course, lots of stroke, lots of TBI. We were a level 2 trauma center, and so we were the hub of Western Wisconsin, if you will, and had a catchment radius of about 100 miles between us here in the Twin Cities. But certainly, those diagnoses, stroke, TBI, were primary for us in many ways. Certainly, then one of the unique things about the SLP team in that time and setup in the hospital system was that we also covered the rest of the hospital, and that was unique to us as an SLP staff on the neuro and trauma unit. So we would often head down to medical telemetry. We would head to the cardiac unit. We would be down in CCU or, you know, other intensive care scenarios. We would occasionally get called down to the emergency department for voice cases, like vocal cord dysfunction that would come in. We would see trachs and vents on the unit as well that weren't on neuro. So we really covered a wide variety of patient diagnoses and types of communication disorders and, of course, following disorders as well. So as we looked at that, there were so many opportunities to work with other disciplines in those particular cases like there are today. And so it really provided for me that foundation and that experience of very high quality professionals and high quality care in those particular contexts wherever they were in the hospital. And then we would also see acute care, subacute. Sometimes some of our beds became rehab beds depending on, you know, where we were at the time and where that patient was. But did some rehab and then we would see them outpatient. So this particular unit and setup allowed me and allowed our team to see the entire continuum of care from day one of onset of injury all the way through reintegration into the community. And it was a powerful opportunity to see that firsthand and to participate in that interdisciplinary care process.
So what are some key observations you've had about interdisciplinary care that are relevant to SLPs today?
Yeah, I think some things about IPP and IPE models are timeless. And one of those things for me is very much about that shared respect. So in my clinical experience, and even today at Pearson as we work across disciplines throughout the business, that shared respect of other professionals and what they know and what we all bring individually to that team is so powerful. And so that relevance in my mind never goes away. When you're working with a team of highly skilled professionals that come from different perspectives but certainly have as an ultimate goal the support and success of that patient and family, then you have a powerful opportunity to really harness everybody's skill set. So to be able to respect that and to share that respect across team members, even when you disagree, to say, I know you're coming at this from this perspective. I know we share the same value and the same goals and outcome desires for our patients and their families. That shared respect provides the ultimate foundation for interdisciplinary care. And I think that's especially relevant to SLPs because we're geared so closely into communication, and respect is formed, I think, at the feet of good communication, frequent communication, the time spent in talking about patients and families and valued outcomes and methodologies for treatment and methodologies for assessment. And that time spent in interdisciplinary care is as valuable as that moment-to-moment patient contact time. And so I would make also the observation that that shared science piece is critical. So in our body of literature, which is diverse and wide and growing every year, we can bring perspectives from the science that sometimes are additive to the science of other professions and their research and their observations about patients and outcomes, and sometimes they conflict. And so when we share that science, then we have to understand them in that larger context. So that's powerful in terms of not only the evidence of clinical experience, if you think about evidence-based practice, but also in the abundance of science that supports all parts of that patient and family recovery. So observations that I would make that continue to be relevant are that shared respect is the foundation of the relationship through communication, the time spent between professionals to add value to the interprofessional practice process, and then the shared science, I think, is so critical to developing highly functioning, high-powered teams that work together for outcomes, outcome-based care.
Thanks. Can you share how your experience, the science, and the current directives from ASHA impact your work at Pearson?
Yeah, this is where the rubber meets the road for me in particular, and one of the things that I think about a fair amount in my work here at Pearson. So, you know, I'm not working clinically full-time anymore, but certainly one of the things that drives me is to continue to check my assumptions about what I learned practicing clinically and practicing in an interdisciplinary way now into the work here that we do, to make sure that we're connected between what is current clinical practice, what, as I mentioned earlier, is timeless, you know, always the case, and what's new, and then bring that into the product development that we do, the way we talk to the rest of the profession about the work that we do, and making sure that those pieces are all connected and make sense in the day-to-day world of work. So that's one piece that impacts my work on a day-to-day basis, that constant checking of assumptions on my part in my own head to say, does this make sense in light of practice in 2018? The second piece, I think, that impacts my work is the tool choice. You know, I'm a person that likes options, so I want to make sure that what we deliver at Pearson not only matches and is connected to Ash's work and connected to practice real-time, day-to-day, but that clinicians and our colleagues out in the field have choices in the tools that they make because situations are different. And so we all understand that best practice is that you don't do the same thing with the same person all the time just because, that in fact we select tools for different contexts because of what we see and what the patient's referral question is or what they might need. So to have a breadth of choices gives clinicians the most flexibility and power to select what they need to do for their current work. And that impacts, of course, my thinking and my work every day so that I can provide and help to work out those choices for clinicians as they go about their days. And the final thing I think is reimbursement realities of today. 2018 is not the same as, you know, 2000 in terms of years and what's happening. And the difference between what works in tools that we use and in the way we do practice and what pays from a reimbursement standpoint. And those two things have to sync. So as we think about what works and we think about what pays from a reimbursement standpoint, we have to consider it in our work here at Pearson, the impact of those two things intersecting. So for me, that drives a lot of my thinking about marrying those two up so that we can, in fact, achieve both at the same time.
Thanks, Tina, for your insights. That's all the time we have for today. I want to thank you for listening, and as a reminder, you can find all of our podcasts and more resources at pearsonclinical.com/rehabilitation.